KALW.
So, you know, Google's taking over everything. All the good businesses have closed. I'm not happy at all.
Today, we're headed to a corner of Mountain View where almost everything is being bought by Google.
There's a social responsibility aspect that if you destroy the town you live in, you might still be the biggest name in town, but you might be the biggest name for all the wrong reasons.
Some think Mountain View is becoming a company town, and they worry about its future.
You know, what happens to the town if the company leaves? A lot of institutions are kind of dependent upon them, but is Google forever? Nothing lasts forever, and that's kind of scary.
Stay tuned for a presentation of the original KALW podcast, The Intersection. Let's go to Mountain View, a city that's home to the second most valuable brand in the world. We're going to hear an episode of The Intersection, a KALW podcast that looks at change in the Bay Area from the view of a street corner. Today, in a story that originally aired in November, KALW's David Boyer explores whether or not Google is turning Mountain View into a company town.
It's undeniable. The tech industry has brought jobs and unprecedented prosperity to this area. This once small, sleepy agricultural town is now synonymous with progress, wealth, and the future. But for folks who have lived here a long time, the changes are dramatic.
The only people who have been able to stay here are people who had a family home that they inherited.
It used to be a much more diverse place to live.
Every day we turn around and something else is gone. Can't handle it.
There's a social responsibility aspect that if you destroy the town you live in, you might still be the biggest name in town, but you might be the biggest name for all the wrong reasons.
Google is definitely the biggest name in town. They account for one out of every five jobs here. And they fund about 10% of Mountain View's total annual budget. But does that make it a company town? I ask Hardy Green. He literally wrote the book on the company town titled, you guessed it, The Company Town.
What would you be looking for to determine if it was a company town?
I'm not sure whether this applies to Google, but one would be diverse number of employers. They don't want to just have all their eggs in one basket, you know. They don't want to be so dependent on any one source of wealth.
There are other big-name companies in town. There's Microsoft and Samsung and Intuit. But Google has 10 times more employees in Mountain View than any of them. And that doesn't include the thousands of subcontractors that work on their campus. Perhaps what's more telling is the trajectory. Google has more than doubled its Mountain View staff in the last 10 years, and it is by far the single largest owner of land. I show Hardy these numbers from the city's annual financial report.
Well, it certainly looks like they're on the top of the hill. So Mountain View may be in the process of becoming a company town, but it sounds like it's not quite there yet.
So how does a town end up in this situation with one big employer? For that answer, we head back to the turn of the century, the year 2000. The first dot-com bubble is about to burst. Companies are folding, layoffs are accelerating, and there's a sense of panic in Silicon Valley. And let's say it's up to you to balance Mountain View's books. That was a big part of Kevin Duggan's job. He was the city manager from 1990 to 2011. When Google came to town in 1999, he wasn't worried about becoming too dependent on the oddly named startup. He was more focused on keeping the library open, his staff paid, and the fire department funded.
When the economy is good, we tend to think it'll be that way forever.
But California is notorious for its cycles of boom and bust. So if you're managing a city, you say yes, a lot, to new buildings, to rezoning, to more jobs, and you see your rainy day fund grow and grow. These days, Mountain View collects about $10 million just in property taxes from Google. The company also pays the city to rent the land that's under the Googleplex.
I think it's probably in the ballpark of $8 million a year of revenue to the city from the lease income. When we had the 2008 downturn, Google was a stabilizing economic influence. I don't want to be Pollyannish, but I think sometimes we just take that a little bit for granted. I mean, literally, there are some places that would consider a state prison as a huge economic development opportunity. So when I explain to people in other parts of the country that one of the major concerns I hear is we have too many well-educated, high-paying jobs, they really can't contain their amazement at that could be considered a problem.
And it's more than jobs and taxes and rent. There are other ways Google contributes to Mountain View. Just their presence attracts other startups and companies to town. Plus, Google donates millions each year to their hometown for things that residents really want, like better bike paths, free community shuttles, even a bookmobile. Still, when it comes to Google, former city manager Kevin Duggan is a realist.
They've made some very specific investments, you know, some would say relatively minor. You know, in fact, one of the challenges I think for Google is sometimes trying to get them to have more of a local focus, which I think they've gotten better on in the last few years. So no company is perfect. Google isn't perfect. Is there more traffic because of their presence? Yeah. Have they had an impact on rents in town? Sure. I'm not advocating communities should have only one major employer, but having one very successful company is a lot better than the alternative.
So it's understandable why a town would welcome a Google, a Kodak, a Chevron, or a Hershey. But what about the other side of the equation? How do companies decide where to set up shop and whether or not to stay and grow? According to company town expert Hardy Green, many of them do so for the same reason.
There's a question of scarcity.
They go where the resources are. Milton Hershey set up shop near the dairies of rural Pennsylvania because he needed milk for his chocolate. Steel and coal companies go where the untapped deposits are.
For Google, I think it's talent. There's been a relocation of talent from all over the world into that area.
Not to mention the world-renowned computer science department of nearby Stanford University, the alma mater of Google's founders and scores of tech billionaires. Of course, Google isn't the only one drawn to this talent pool. Hundreds of tech companies from startups to giants are here in this valley, all trying to nab the next Zuckerberg. So it's not just about Google. In many ways, this story would be similar if it was about an intersection just up the road near Facebook in Menlo Park or Apple in Cupertino. Because while Mountain View may or may not be a company town, Silicon Valley is definitely dominated by one industry, just like the mining towns that dotted the so-called Steel Belt in the 20th century. You know how that ended? Well, it's now known as the Rust Belt.
I was born one morning when the sun didn't shine. I picked up my shovel and I walked to the mine. I loaded 16 tons of number 9 coal, and the straw boss said, well, bless my soul, you load.
Google seems so different than the 20th century company towns that Tennessee Ernie Ford sang about in this song. It's not industrial. There aren't workers sweating in mines or over assembly lines. I mean, all in all, Google and the other big tech companies look like pretty cushy places to work. I mentioned this to Hardy.
Many people hear the term and immediately think of negative things. We think of the term company town as meaning a kind of a big brother-ish place where the company controls everything. It's almost like a prison camp. But there were some places, and I don't say it was half, but there were some places that were built to be paternalistic and nice places. So one of the main ones that always comes to mind is Hershey, Pennsylvania. You know, there were libraries and schools, there were parks. So it was built to be a place where people would want to move to and would want to live. But you are actually being kind of controlled by the company in many ways. And it would be a more sort of benign dictatorship.
And that seems to be the model adopted by Google and other tech giants. In the last two decades, a kinder, gentler version of corporate control has emerged. Companies compete for talent with luxe campuses and by pampering employees with free organic meals, massages, transportation, haircuts, dance classes, dry cleaning, and more. It's like a prison camp people choose to go to, with cold brew on tap and cozy pods to nap in.
They make it more and more so that you're practically living there all the time. You can get your laundry done, you know, you can eat there and never go home, really. So people are encouraged to work all the time.
What would be the signs that all isn't well here, that there's something to worry about?
One would be, is there a two-tier structure developing where you have, you know, a group of engineers who are highly paid and bus drivers who are not so well paid? And, you know, that is something also to be concerned about.
Clearly, there are two tiers at Google and most large tech companies. There are employees, and then there are subcontractors. The subcontractors are paid far less, receive fewer perks, and less generous benefits. And while workers used to be able to climb from the factory floor to mid-level management, it's become nearly impossible in Silicon Valley for subcontractors to rise from the corporate cafeterias to the C-suite. These disparities are not going unnoticed or unchallenged. Unions have successfully organized cafe workers at Facebook, and groups are forming to tackle what some are calling occupational segregation.
Today, we are launching a campaign driven by an unprecedented coalition of labor, faith, and community-based organizations and workers. Silicon Valley Rising is about bringing us together to solve our biggest challenges.
That's Ben Field. He leads the South Bay's AFL-CIO Labor Council, which co-founded this grassroots campaign that's advocating for higher wages and affordable housing for workers.
But what we're seeing now is that the benefits of growth are not reaching everyone. Those who drive for, serve, and protect the Valley's high-tech giants, which make billions of dollars in profits, those families are barely getting by. So, what we need is to expand economic opportunities so that more people who work for a living can actually make a living.
These opportunities cannot come fast enough for subcontractors like Google shuttle driver Roxanne, who we met earlier in the season. She is one of more than 100 in Mountain View living in RVs and trailers because they simply can't afford an apartment within a couple of hours of their job.
And it's getting worse, and they're seeing seniors and kids and families. This is what they're doing because of the rent situation.
And that, according to Hardy, is another symptom of the company town.
That's true of a lot of these meatpacking towns in the Midwest. People can't afford real houses, so they're living in trailers. That's a bad sign. I don't know, something needs to be done about that. If you really have a lot of people who are living in very temporary, unsustainable situations. I guess another issue would be, is there an independent press there?
So there are plenty of voices in the press and public pushing back. And there is a quote-unquote independent press. But it's been hard for journalists to actually do their jobs. For 9 years, Dan DeBolt reported on Google's impact on the city for the Mountain View Voice. As we walk around the company's ever-expanding headquarters in the North Bayshore neighborhood, he tells me what it was like.
Covering Google is very difficult as a journalist. They do not like to be open. You know, for a long time, I couldn't figure out how many employees they had in Mountain View. For years, I couldn't figure that out. It's still very unclear. 20,000 employees is the number that the one that I see, you know, still being reported in the news. You know, it's a weird thing to not be able to get basic information, you know, about things that deeply impact the city.
And you ask them that directly?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, a number of times. They just often will ignore you. After a while, I just came to expect it. It's hard when you have such a powerful company in your town. It's an incredible power imbalance. I mean, that's very hard to overcome. I think our city council has a really hard time demanding everything that they could get from Google. Like, for example, we need affordable housing built. And we could, you know, say, well, you can't build any more offices unless you agree to fund this many affordable homes. And they have not been very aggressive at all in that kind of conversation.
Expert Hardy Green agrees that the city council's greatest leverage is its power to decide what gets built and where.
You know, zoning has historically been a big lever that any government has.
In 2015, the city finally stood up to Google and used this lever to contain the company's growth in North Bayshore. They awarded LinkedIn the right to develop a huge parcel right next to Google's campus, while seriously downsizing Google's own expansion plans. Several of the city council members, including Mike Kasperzak, seemed to be worried that the company was simply becoming too big.
I personally think that economic diversity is important. I've lived through two corporations in Mountain View, that were, you know, masters of the universe and are no longer with us. I'm not, there's no spells being cast, but, you know, you just never know.
A few months later, Google flexed their financial and strategic muscle to get what they wanted. They circumvented the will of the city council by engineering a massive land swap with LinkedIn. Now, Google effectively owns or leases almost every acre of developable land in the neighborhood. They have so many projects going on in Mountain View that they agreed to fund an additional position to help the city's planning department deal with the sheer volume of requests. If this were a game of Monopoly, it would just about be over. Google's expansion over the last decade plus has already had a profound effect on small businesses in the neighborhood. Some owners complain that the intense traffic deters customers. Others feel like it's hard to attract customers when most people in the neighborhood are Googlers with 24/7 access to free food and all those perks. And the businesses that are successful, they risk being pushed out to make room for development. That is what's happening right on the corner at Overtime Fitness. The gym is being forced to close, and the building is going to be leveled to make room for a 200-room business hotel. I approach one member, a non-Googler in a white sweatsuit with hot pink piping, as she's about to enter for the last time.
Excuse me. Pardon me. Hi. I'm curious how you feel about Overtime closing.
Well, I'm not happy.
Yeah.
I've been coming here for 10 years. Actually, I work across the street, so it works out really good to have a gym here. So, you know, Google's taking over everything. All the good businesses have closed. Not happy at all.
There used to be a deli there.
Great place. Yeah, we were sad to see that go, too. And I guess they just bought the sports page, too, the bar over there. So, you know, you're supposed to like change, but it's hard sometimes.
We'll hear about the precarious future of the Sports Page Bar and Mountain View in just a minute. I'm Ben Trefney, and you're listening to The Intersection, an original KALW podcast produced by David Boyer. This episode originally aired in the fall of 2017, and the series has since won a Regional Murrow Award. You can hear the entire season by subscribing. Just go to your favorite podcast provider or get connected at theintersection.fm or kalw.org. Now let's get back to this episode, and we'll hear what planning decisions led to the transformation of Mountain View.
Remember that big real estate swap with LinkedIn? Well, part of what Google got is the land under the sports page. This is not just any bar. It's been on this corner in one form or another for more than 60 years. In the 50s, it was a beer garden. In the 60s and 70s, it was a biker bar. And more recently, it's been known around the Googleplex as Building 50, the unofficial bar of Googlers.
Hello, people.
I'm sorry, what was your name?
David.
David.
Yeah. Tony.
I am Heather, and I work as an admin assistant at Google. We come at least two or three times a week. Tonight, we're actually celebrating one of our coworkers' birthdays.
Happy birthday.
But we're pretty much barflies. But it's right across the street from our building, so it's kind of hard not to.
In most of the Silicon Valley tech companies, having a bar in your office is common. So it's not about just looking for a place to drink. It's about looking for a location.
Kind of a in-between space.
I've been living here in Mountain View for about, 30 years. So I've been coming here for years. I mean, the same old place. You know, even though it's the tech world, when you come here, it feels like everybody's just hanging. That's why I pray they don't knock it down and build something here. You got to have a little bit of the local around here, you know?
The sports page's problem is that it's literally standing in the way of change, because this very corner is a linchpin in the plan to remake North Bayshore.
I don't believe this building's going to be standing a decade from now. My name is Rob Graham. I'm the owner, operator of the Sports Page Bar and Grill.
Rob and his wife Jackie have owned the bar for more than two decades.
For the first time in 25 years, I got a new landlord. Google spent approximately $12 million to buy this little corner. Less than 3/4 of an acre. And
who do you make your checks out to?
G-O-O-G-L-E. That's the way it goes.
They still have 7 years left on their lease. And even though the bar is a Googler favorite where they celebrated their IPO, Google, it seems, doesn't want to wait until 2024 to begin construction on this corner.
We've been talking to Google and their representatives. In my dream world, they would find a very comfortable, small baby site for us around here where we could transfer our operation. But if the place disappears completely, and in at a time where we're constantly tearing down things, the history, the continuity, that would be lost. You know, yeah, it's great to see progress. But concrete buildings and glass are not always better. You know, they're not always better.
For now, Rob is largely optimistic that his negotiations with Google will work out.
Google's philosophy is do no evil. But having said that, I don't know. It's a big, powerful company. It's by no means it's a dinosaur, but it's a damn big animal.
A damn big animal, like Godzilla. Intentional or not, every move it makes has the potential to obliterate a building and send crowds of locals scurrying for cover. Before I leave Rob and the sports page, I ask him one last question. Does he think Google is turning Mountain View into a company town?
It is no and it is yes. I mean, I think their wallet gives them leverage. They have the ability to basically do anything financially that they want to do.
That tracks with expert Hardy Green's definition.
I think of a company town as a town where the company actually is able to call the shots in many ways.
Is part of the definition of a company town that if the company goes away, the town is in serious trouble?
It does seem like, yes, that's the definition, is that, you know, what happens to the town if the company leaves? A lot of institutions are kind of dependent upon them, but is Google forever? I mean, nothing lasts forever, and that's kind of scary.
Newton, Iowa struggled for years after Maytag was sold and its headquarters shuttered. And recently, folks in Hershey, Pennsylvania breathed a sigh of relief when the chocolate maker turned down a multi-billion dollar offer from an international conglomerate known for gutting its acquisitions. Some Mountain View City Council members and many residents are concerned about life after Google. But former city manager Kevin Duggan sees a company worth over $600 billion and thinks there's not much to worry about.
People ask me, well, what if Google goes away tomorrow? What will happen? And I said, well, the reality is Google has the financial resource that even if something catastrophic happened, it's not going anyplace. It's like, while some tech companies can disappear in a blip, Google is too big. It's not going away anyplace quickly. At worst, it would be an evolution, a slower downsizing.
There's no indication that they're planning to leave Mountain View or downsize anytime soon. They just broke ground on the first of several developments in North Bayshore, which net the city another $30 million in upfront rent. And they restarted a massive office and housing project right next door at Moffett Field. So there's the very real possibility that Google will stay in North Bayshore and develop every available parcel. Even if Mountain View doesn't become Google Town, this neighborhood will be a sort of Google village with housing, retail, a new transit system, and even more Googlers. But there are other scenarios. Google could, for instance, decide to move to an area that's more amenable to growth, with better transit and more housing. In fact, this summer, they made an announcement that surely caught the attention of Mountain View City Council and staff.
And big news for downtown San Jose today. Google is looking for the green light to build a new mega campus in San Jose. Right now, the Googleplex in Mountain View is about 3 million square feet. This new downtown mega campus could eventually reach 6 million square feet, making it the largest collection of Google offices anywhere in the world.
That new campus would be near a soon-to-be-completed mass transit hub. It would have enough space for 20,000 employees and plenty of housing within walking distance. Now, if 20,000 sounds familiar, it's because that's approximately the same number of Googlers that local reporter Dan DeBolt believes are working in North Bayshore right now. Dan left the Mountain View Voice in 2015 to become an affordable housing advocate. He's no fan of Google, but he does appreciate the challenges that they're facing.
You know, you can't blame Google entirely. It's just, it points to a fundamental flaw that you simply can't build housing as fast as you can grow jobs. It's like a warning to the world. You know, this is what happens when you have a quote, successful job center. There's no free lunch for that. There's actually a huge number of consequences.
So So I was chatting with a friend who works at Google, and I promised I wouldn't use her name, but she made a point that's really stuck with me. When innovation is your North Star and upsetting the status quo is your priority, you can't worry so much about whether or not your company is too big or too disruptive. You spend your time and money thinking about moonshots and fixes, not the people cleaning your offices and driving your shuttles, not how your growth is making it harder for locals to find affordable housing or to get from point A to point B. These are distractions, at least until they threaten your company's progress and bottom line.
You just heard a special presentation of The Intersection, an original KALW podcast produced by David Boyer. That episode originally aired in the fall of 2017. We had help from Lisa Morehouse, Ashley Ann Krigbaum, Emma McAvoy, and Liza Veal. Chris Hoff mixed the episode, and James Rollins and Gabe Graben mixed this show. The Intersection was made possible with a grant from the San Francisco Arts Commission and support from California Humanities, a nonprofit partner of the National Endowment for the Humanities. To find more episodes, subscribe wherever you get your podcasts, or go online to theintersection.fm or kalw.org. Thanks for listening. For KALW News, I'm Ben Treffney.